And then one of the things that's really, it's funny because I've noticed, obviously, Trump is going through his transition right now. That sounds really weird every time I say that.
Yeah. He's not transitioning. He's going through a transition.
Every time I say that, I was like, this is what they ruin everything. Anyway,
I think that our country is right now in the most dangerous position it's ever been.
Confident that there will be a peaceful transfer of power in January 2025.
If Trump wins, no, I'm not confident.
Take a look at what happened.
You're considered the most liberal United States senator.
Somebody said that.
Campaign rally is not a press conference. Why hasn't she had a press conference? She's the vice president. She can handle the questions. Why not do it?
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed.
4 months from now, we will have an incredible victory, and we will begin the four greatest years in the history of our country.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Campaign Games, the game of survival for both the candidates and the voters. I'm Asadi. I'm here with my friend Rachel. Nice and early in the morning.
Hey.
How you doing, girl?
I'm good. I'm ready for Thanksgiving.
I know, right? That's what everybody is doing right now. We're all getting revved up for the Thanksgiving time season.
Yep. Right Christmas. After we wrap this, it's going to be prepping all day. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I have a little bit of prep to do too, but I'm sure mine is a little more low key than yours because it's just me and my husband and the dogs. And honestly, I throw them a bone and they're fine. Literally all of them. My husband too. But before we get into this, go ahead and give us a follow, leave us a 5-star rating, and leave us a comment. We got some brand new comments. They're really nice. We enjoy reading them. And yeah, let's go ahead and talk about this because late yesterday, it's so funny. So a lot of times Rachel and I will plan what we're going to discuss. Inevitably, periodically, something will happen late in the evening that has to be discussed.
Yes, and this needs to be discussed.
So if you are following either one of us, or if you're like spend any time on social media, you would have seen a 25-second clip that started to go viral of Harris, who has been MIA, frankly, for the last since the election, but especially the last 2 weeks. I think she was in Hawaii on vacation.
She's in Hawaii taking, as it was told to us, much needed R&R after the defeat.
Yes. Our best friend, Karine Jean-Pierre, from the press pulpit at the White House during a briefing, was sure to point out that she
deserved it,
and that she really needed some time off after such a strong fought campaign. So my question is, like, what would have happened if she had actually won the election? That's the thing with this lady, okay? She's always needing a break. She's always needing, like, 2 weeks to over-prepare.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, at least throughout everything that I've seen her do, she falls flat on her face. Like, the preparation just does not seem to pan out. And yesterday, this clip of Harris started to go viral. And she legitimately looks drunk in this. And I don't even say that lightly because I'm very reluctant. Like, I know there's been jokes about how she is the drunk aunt or the wine aunt or however it is that people want to put it. But this clip, legitimately, she looked like she was like slurring her words. Her eyes were closed. I don't know. Like, I texted Rachel and I was like, okay, you're right. I think she's drunk.
Yeah. Well, because no one wants to joke about that. At least I don't. I know that there's lots of Republicans that like to capitalize on stuff like this, just as there are Democrats who want to capitalize on someone on our side of the aisle acting foolish in some way. So, but this isn't something that's funny, especially for people who have had alcoholics in their family. So I think a lot of people tread lightly when the topic comes up. But I also know that there are rumors around people who would know that there's been a problem for a while for her, where in other appearances, interviews, social gatherings, and on tape, which I have posted before, where she just appears intoxicated. I don't know if it's alcohol or some kind of something else, but there seems to be a substance like issue. But again, nobody wants to be the person who's like, is there something we should talk about? Should we talk about this? And so I think people kind of dance around it a little bit. But last night it was too obvious not to say something.
Well, to give you guys a background of this, the video that was going viral was about like 24 second video. And let's go ahead and I'll play it for you guys here. And then let me give you some more context on it.
I just have to remind you, don't you ever let anybody take your power from you. You have the same power that you did before November 5th. And you have the same purpose that you did. And you have the same ability to engage and inspire. So don't ever let anybody or any circumstance take your power from you.
So that's Harris trying to give her volunteers, I guess the grassroots volunteers for her campaign,
some encouragement.
Yeah.
But you really have to watch it on video. Like if you could take a moment, we'll put the link in the show notes. Please go watch it because the video of it really kind of seals the deal. You can tell by her speech, the cadence of it, that obviously something's different and off, but watching it is also just very revealing.
So it is a smaller portion of a longer, like about 10, almost 11 minute video.
10 minutes, yeah.
That she did with Tim Walz. It was a national grassroots call where she was addressing the troops. And I remember seeing on social media where some of her donors were talking about, oh, she's going to have this grassroots call, sent it out to everyone where people can kind of, they could watch this unfold, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And if you watch the entire video, because actually, Rachel and I were literally talking about this morning because I could not find the original source video because I trust nobody. I want to see the original source video. Found it. It's actually almost with the interview with Tim Walz, it's almost 14 minutes. So it's actually a little bit longer.
Okay.
And she, even through this longer video, does not look great in it. Now, she seems to kind of come out of it, be a little bit more lucid, but she doesn't really pull it all together. Mm-mm. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. And so anybody can cut, and we understand, and conservatives are constantly like the victims of cutting and splicing creatively videos to make things completely they're taken out of context. And so I get it. We don't want to do that, especially when we're talking about this. But so I went and watched the rest of it. And there were moments where she would kind of snap out of it and seem lucid and seem with it, or I shouldn't say completely, but better than the snipped video that we watched. But then she'd fall right back into this kind of like lazy, almost lulled to sleep kind of. Yeah. And not great. The optics are really bad. And we can talk about that in a minute, but it's just, it's really sad. It's a really sad video that they put out. Whoever did that clearly doesn't like her. And I would go so far as to say completely sabotaging her future endeavors, unless it just doesn't matter and they all kind of are in on it and they know that this is her. I don't know.
Well, what I found really weird is the clip that went viral was posted the worst part of the entire interview.
Right.
And it was posted by the Democrats' X account.
Yeah. Well, I think probably because that was the only thing she said in the total 14 minutes. I think that's what you said. Video that kind of sounded like something she said before. She talks about, I've heard her in other speeches, don't ever let anyone take away your power. Don't ever let anybody take away your joy. That's kind of her, well, for lack of a better word, vibe. So maybe that's why they clipped that part. That sounds like her. That sounds like something she'd say. It kind of is cohesive with the rest of her campaign message. That's the only reason they could possibly clip that part, which is arguably one of the worst parts in the entire video, and post it. I can't think of another reason.
So what was interesting about this entire call is, I don't know if you had been following around, but I go and lurk around on TikTok. And so TikTok is a really...
I don't have the talk.
It's a really special place that one can go and kind of peek into the mind of a Harris voter, especially a younger Harris voter. Okay.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'll pass. I'll let you do the dirty work there.
And one of the things that I have seen that have come up, and I think I even sent you a screenshot of a comment that was on Instagram, is this. So Harris, after the election, has been sending out campaign emails, same campaign list, still requesting donations from
for
people.
What? For what?
Okay. But if you look into, you know how like all of these emails have like a fine print down at the bottom of like what it's for, restrictions, whatever. So at the bottom of it, there is language, because they changed the language down at the bottom, that insinuates that they're fundraising to pay for recounts.
So they're going to contest the election?
Well, see, here's the deal. I don't know if this is like recounts for House.
Like where? What states? What?
It doesn't really. And it's, and it has like a whole bunch of states. So it's because it does have like states listed and stuff and everything. And I need to read it in detail, but I unsubscribed from the Harris Walz campaign email. So I haven't, I need to go like dig one up and see if there's still the language out there.
Yeah.
But essentially, people are taking that little note down at the bottom and, or Harris voters, I should say, and they're using it as a little like granule of hope that Harris is going to contest the election. And in fact, I saw videos on TikTok where they were talking about this grassroots call that you could listen to. And they were really hoping that she was going to address the election because the math ain't mathing, quote, that is what a lot of them are saying. And that it doesn't make any sense that Biden got so many during 2020 and Harris didn't, and that it's this close, and that the poll said this, and then this happened. So there's this like little conspiracy theory that is like brewing in these circles. That
I feel like I remember being told that we should not do that, that it was bad that we questioned in 2020. I mean, I didn't necessarily, but a lot of conservatives did, and we were chastised for the last 4 years
well,
for doing that.
I mean,
so
if we're going to be fair, I will say that Harris.
They're not saying that. She did say I lost. She did come out and say that.
So it is different, but there is an undercurrent of a lot of people having that discussion. And one of the things that are feeding into it is this recount language at the bottom of the email. Now,
that
what
is interesting, though, because I want to know, I want an accounting of that money. And I'm sure people who donate, even though they feel like they're donating to a good cause, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, I bet you they want to know where their money's going to. That would be interesting.
You mean the $1 billion that Harris raised and then went $20 million in debt?
Yes, I'm very curious. And I want to know who's paying the debt. I want to know where that money's coming from. I have so many questions.
I really think, I mean, I don't want to.
Miss Sadie, could you write a post about it? See, I like it much better when you do the research and I get to read your paper. You would be the kid in school, like I would pair up with to do a project with, because you would do the project.
That was my entire high school career.
I know, which is why we work well together.
I have control issues and I
don't
to know everything. It's so funny. But yeah, so that's kind of weird that, and people were actually hoping that this discussion was going to address that, that it was going to give them some kind of grain of hope of like, oh, I've changed my mind.
Oh, so they were really disappointed then when not only she didn't address it, but she was
drunk.
She kind of had too much White Zinfandel.
Yeah. So. And the thing is, the entire, what I found really fascinating this time around on this particular clip is that there's a lot of people out there that will immediately jump on it and and joke about her being the wine aunt or whatever on the right.
Yeah.
But there are pundits, commentators, whatever you want to call individuals like ourselves, that are much more reluctant because it's just not something I don't find a lot of joy in poking fun at something that could be a legitimate issue. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's sad. It's actually really sad.
And but this time around, there's actually people going, why did you guys post this? This doesn't look good. And people who were like, even, and I pointed this out, like Meghan McCain, who is not one of my favorites, but I consider her to be relatively, for the most part, fair in her criticisms and pointing out like what's good and what's right and what's going on in the world of politics. She was even like, this is not, you should not be putting this
why
out.
Why are you this doing this?
Very unkind of her, of you guys to put this out.
Yeah, and there it kind of when you see something so blatant like that and so obvious to probably the majority of people, like, don't post that. If you're on her side, don't post that. It leads someone to wonder, is this an intentional sabotage? So you look at the track record over the last like 4 months, they ran a man who everybody on the Hill and in the White House knew was not there mentally for the last several years. Everybody knew it, but they ran him anyway. And only after it became apparent to the rest of the public in a way where nobody could ignore it anymore, did they pull him and kind of shoved him into the back room. And then they ran Kamala, who no one wanted, not even them, not even the Democrats. They ran her anyways. And did they run her knowing that this was going to be an issue as well as her many other issues? And so maybe now they're licking their wounds and going, because it was floated this last week, she's going to run for, potentially run for governor of California. Maybe she'll do another presidential run in 2018 or 2028.
Excuse me.
And so maybe they're like, no, she cannot. We cannot do this again. But that would take some heavy coordination from this, the Democrats group with bigger players.
Well, and why would you sabotage her, quote unquote, sabotage her this early?
Right. And in this way, like there's other ways there's plenty of other things they could use. It just seems real sloppy and weird and sad and bizarre. It's just bizarre.
Well, and let me tell you, in general, I'm seeing conversations happening within Harris supporters and Harris voters. And I'm talking about like normal people, like average everyday people like ourselves and listeners and stuff who are upset about how this entire thing went down. And so the senior advisor to the Harris campaign, I think her name is Stephanie Cutter. Mm-hmm. She went on to Pod Save America for an interview.
Yeah, I saw that. Mm-hmm.
The, what we will call Obama bros or Pod bros or whatever. And she gave the most, did you watch her response on how they, okay, let me let everybody listen to this because this to me is nuts.
On the Biden question, we of course got that everywhere we went. And we knew what the data was. We knew we had to show her as her own person and point to the future and not try to rehash the past. She also felt that she was part of the administration. And unless we said something like, well, I would have handled the border completely differently, we were never going to satisfy anybody. We were trying to tell a story and give the impression that she was different without pointing to a specific issue.
Can I ask this, why not a specific issue? Is this something she was unwilling to do? I mean, you worried it would feel disingenuous?
She felt like she was part of the administration, so why should she look back and cherry pick some things that she would have done differently when she was part of it? She had tremendous loyalty to President Biden. You've been on plenty of campaigns. Imagine if we said, well, we would have taken this approach on the border. Imagine the round of stories coming out after that of people saying, well, she never said that in the meeting, or what meeting when she said this, or I remember when she did that. And it wasn't going to give us what we needed because it wouldn't be a clean break. It would be, you know, days upon days in a limited time window that we had of dealing of who, what, when, where. So the best we could do and the most that she felt comfortable with was saying, like, look, vice presidents never break with their presidents. The only time in recent memory is when Pence broke with Trump after Trump stormed the Capitol.
They call that the murder exemption. If the president tries to murder you, you can break. Yes.
If you are, you know, ripping up the Constitution, trying to overturn an election, people die, then you can break with your president.
Okay, so you listen to this, right? And I was actually having this discussion with my husband last night because either you are completely inept as a campaign advisor, or she, like, you let her take the reins. And I don't understand what happened because she's arguing here that, yeah, we understand that the administration had its problems. And I mean, what, I think Biden was sitting at like below a 40% approval rating or something.
That's not like, just problems. That's like, you're going to lose. And
I think
lose
he was like
badly.
In the high 30s or something, which historically.
Unrecoverable problems. Those aren't little problems that they can try and tackle and resolve quickly.
Anybody with any kind of like understanding of history when it comes to campaigns and elections and things like that know that when you are the incumbent and you have an economic or it's viewed as like there is an economic issue and your approval rating is sitting in the low 40s going into 30s,
mm-hmm.
then it's going to be hard for you to recover from that and win a second term. Okay.
Right.
And for her to be arguing like, oh, we knew that problem, but also Harris was aware that she was part of the administration. So she didn't want to like look back, but we also had to make it look like we were looking forward without really addressing the problem that we would need to address in order to look forward. And mm-hmm. and then she's arguing that the news cycle would then become, if she had said something like, what was it that she said? If she had said something like, I would have done this differently, then the news cycle would have been, well, why didn't she then? And I'm like, are you a more, am I, okay.
Yeah.
If I was the advisor, if I was mm-hmm. Stephanie here, I would prefer to, because either way, you're going to have to battle out the headline, right?
Right? You picked Kamala to be the person, the nominee, okay? And so what did you expect to happen? Pick one of them. You're either going to catch slack up front and potentially win because you made a clear delineation between yourself and the incumbent, or you're going to do what you did, which is draw no distinctions and act like everything was hunky-dory and everybody's going to go, well, I don't want another 4 years of that. Bye. And not vote for you. So which one? Pick your poison. Well, you picked Kamala. Deal with it.
And it seems like, I mean, obviously I know that this is what she does. She's trying to protect the work that she did or whatever. But also it's making me wonder, like, are they trying to protect Harris too?
Well, because they want her to run again? I don't know.
I don't know. Like, it just seems like
would not be. I mean, do it. Great. Please run her again.
Please do it again.
But like, that's not a good idea. And America said this is not a good idea. They did not want her. As much as a lot of America cannot stand Donald Trump, some of them still prefer him to her. That is an indictment on her character and her stature as a politician. Don't run her again. Just move on.
Well, and the amount of comments that I have seen where people who follow, like, were Harris supporter, listened to Pod Saves America, were having a visceral reaction to this interview. Because mm-hmm. they were yeah. like, will you just take some responsibility and right. acknowledge that this was wrong?
A bad idea. And well, I think that there are normie Democrats who don't want to be lumped in with extremely progressive suburban women who are screeching about how racist they are and how they haven't done enough work to save America. I think that there are normie Democrats who realize we really ran a bad campaign. This was not a good idea. Something needs to change within our ranks because they would pull something like this and then think it's okay and still defend it. I mean, we're almost 4 weeks out and the media and a lot of Democrats are still totally defending their loss. And that it really is just Americans being racist. And they're not doing any introspection whatsoever to kind of uncover why it is they actually lost. And if they keep running this way, if they keep talking about how it's because half of America is totally fine with white supremacy and the patriarchy and all of these Latinos are just,
80.
Yeah, self, exactly. If they keep doing that, they're going to lose the next election too.
For sure.
So they need to. And I think a lot of normie Democrats know that. I think that they're watching it and going, oh, man, we got to stop with this. We got to stop with this kind of woke narrative. And they hate saying it and admitting it, but they've got a problem inside their party where there's no cohesion and there's really no sense of adherence to one type of message. They were kind of all over the place. But right now, a majority of the people with a microphone are talking about how the reason that they lost is because all of these Americans are stupid, uneducated. They didn't go to college. They haven't traveled the world. They don't know anything. And they're all racist. That's yeah. not going to work. Just keep doing it. Democrats, please. But it's not going
to
work.
The other one is discussions about how they need to become more progressive in their economic policies.
Good luck with that, too.
I feel like that is also a bad idea.
Why are they going to double down? This is not working. Gosh,
like,
because we talk about Thanksgiving. This is exhausting. Come on.
Learn your freaking lessons. It's just crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. It's gaslighting is what it is. They're trying to rewrite history. They're trying to tell people why Harris lost instead of accepting why she lost.
Well, let me tell you, this is what's funny is that the Harris campaign and the Democrats are not the only ones that aren't learning their lessons. Honestly, like I'm about to make this transition and they're basically the same people. But they're the only ones that are not learning their lessons and are doubling down or in denial. And specifically, I am pointing the finger at the media.
Yeah, it's bad. It's gone from bad to worse. I thought maybe they would take a minute and kind of glance over the last couple of years, learn from their mistakes, but no.
Maybe learn to be journalists again, be objective in their reporting.
Bridge too far.
Meet people where they are. But no, that is absolutely not happening. So if you missed it, Axios CEO Jim Vanderheen, I think is how you pronounce his last name.
It's Vandy.
Vandy. He had I think it's a meltdown. I think we can justifiably.
It was an adult meltdown. Yes.
So he was receiving an award at the National Press Club. He did his little award speech, and this is what he had to say.
Everything we do is under fire. Elon Musk sits on Twitter every day or X today saying, like, we are the media. You are the media. My message to Elon Musk is bullshit. You're not the media. You having a blue check mark, a Twitter handle, and 300 words of cleverness doesn't make you a reporter any more than me looking at your head and seeing that you have a brain and telling you have an awesome set of tools makes me a damn neurosurgeon, right? Like, what we do, what journalists do, what you did in Mississippi, what Al Jazeera does in the Middle East, you proclaim yourself to be a reporter? Like, that's nonsense. Like, being a reporter is hard, really hard. You have to care. You have to do the hard work. You have to get up every single day and say, I want to get to the closest approximation of the truth without any fear, without any favoritism. You don't do that by popping off on Twitter. You don't do that by having an opinion. You do it by doing the hard work.
Yeah, come on. Slow clap, everybody. Whoa. First of all, I've got to say, extraordinary content. It needed to be said.
Yeah.
It continues to need to be said. When all of the garbage is flying around on social media, lying about reporters, lying about the hard work they do, lying about the hard work editors do, lying about everything up and down about not only their alternative set of facts, but alternative set of facts about what people like you do.
Now, that clip that I just played for you guys was Morning Joe. So, which is why you hear at the end Scarborough and there's like a panel and they're all applauding what he just said. Mm-hmm. This complete and utter meltdown about the We Are the Media, which is a tweet that or an ex post that Elon put out. They're like really upset about this.
Yeah.
And I find it hilarious.
Very threatened. Very threatened. If he didn't make that clear in his rant.
Well, and to make the comparison of reporting to a neurosurgeon is insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny to me because I don't think a lot of these people do not seem to comprehend that originally how reporting was done, like at its root, I would almost categorize it as a blue collar job. It was citizens. It was normal people that were looking for the truth objectively and would go out, investigate it, and report what they found. Yeah. And then it wasn't until later where universities, elite Ivy League universities, started to have these programs of journalism where it became this whole elite like ecosystem where now you have to be within the upper echelons and have all these connections and stuff like that in order for you to progress within the circle. And people are just like not having it anymore because
these are highly educated, overeducated people who come out and lie a lot. And and they don't even try to engage with another side of an argument. And it's very blatant. And so it's gone from, these gumshoe reporters who pound the pavement and work really, really, really hard and report the news. And you probably could pick up on their opinion occasionally to, we're going to sit on a panel. We're going to call ourselves, quote unquote, unbiased journalists. And we're going to tell you how to think and demonize people who think differently than us. Also, never talk to those people. So why do you think Americans are like exiting? They're totally canceling their viewership to your programs, to your papers, because they don't trust you and you treat them real like poorly. And this guy is so scared. You can tell he's so scared because there's a bunch of people like us sitting around and talking,
criticizing them.
How dare you criticize us? We work so hard. It was so funny. There was a couple of reporters that I heard talking about this, who, when he said, "We work so hard, journalism is extremely difficult." And the journalist was like, "No, it's not. Like, it's not super difficult anymore." And I'm not discrediting what honest journalists do. It's a job just like every other job. Let's not act like you are a neurosurgeon, okay? You're not. Let's not even bring that into the equation. He just seems so scared as a grown man who co-founded both Politico and Axios. You'd think that he would kind of have some wisdom when he speaks. They're just all of this, the whole journalistic enterprise is so scared of Elon Musk and what he might offer people by way of just an open and free platform to talk about ideas. That would kind of ruin their entire paradigm, you know?
Well, and I think that's probably the crux of it, is that it almost seems like, look, I'm going to give, obviously, there is incorrect information on X and mm-hmm. on social media platforms. Obviously, there's yes. individuals who have accounts that are trying to push their own agenda. Okay.
Yes.
I'm not delusional to that. Just because you see it on the internet doesn't make it true. Okay.
Right.
The goal is to find people that are going to give you the information straight and be willing to criticize their own, along with giving credit to the opposing side when it's merited. The problem is that publications like Politico and Axios have not done that, including MSNBC, CBS, all of these establishments, right? And for a long time, they had a monopoly on mm-hmm. the source of information, on having authority, which they just mm-hmm. love to be like, we have the credentials, we have the authority.
And they're watching it kind of dissolve in front of their faces.
And the fact that they're so upset about X, because you're like, that has incorrect. Yes, we all know that, doofus.
Yeah.
We all are all aware that there is incorrect information on social media. And does it make it a lot harder to be properly informed? Yeah, absolutely. But maybe sometimes working for things and making things harder, as opposed to being spoon fed, being spoon fed ideas, is better, because you have, like, I think that an individual become much more informed that way. Now, they can also become ill-informed.
But you're exercising critical thinking skills. You're not just a robot that's like, being told like what to think and what's happening. You actually have to do your own investigative work, and they don't want you to.
No.
They don't.
And they had no complaints about X when the messaging was predominantly going one way. Speaking of CBS poll, or CBS did polling, right? And actually, no, I'm going backwards. So it was a CNN segment, okay? Mm-hmm. So on CNN, there was a segment where they were talking about X, and they pointed out that Twitter 1.0, or the original Twitter, was like 67% left-leaning. Versus now, it's like 47, 48 or something like that. Like, it's something really, it's
balanced,
very balanced, almost 50-50, which is much more reflective of the electorate.
Mm-hmm.
And now is when you're starting to have the media be upset about it and complain about it. And
they're freaking out. They've lost their stronghold, for sure. They've lost the grip on one of the largest, if not the largest, platform for free speech in our country, in the world. They cannot handle it.
It's super upset. And then one of the things that's really, it's funny, because I've noticed, obviously, Trump is going through his transition right now. That sounds really weird every time I say that.
Yeah. He's not transitioning. He's going through a transition.
Every time I say that, I was like, this is what, they ruin everything. Anyways, he is doing, there's the White House, I don't know, presidential transition team or whatever, right? And of course, if you listen to the media right now, they're all full-blown panic. everybody yeah. that is being appointed is to do Trump's bidding. It's yeah. to take away the rights of Americans. It's to completely mm-hmm. uproot our systems, which, yes, yeah, kind of, you know, not in the way that
was what people voted for. That was the point.
Well, what's funny is like the language of wanting to fundamentally change our systems or uproot our systems. This is not new language. We heard mm-hmm. this during, like, for example, Obama. Like he yeah. said openly that he wanted to fundamentally change things and people voted for that. Now, his fundamental change, I think, is very different from what Republicans are proposing, where we're trying to go back to a more originalist status mm-hmm. versus what Democrats tend to do is, you know, their policies seem to be more about stripping away just the root constitutional issues mm-hmm. of how the United States was created and right. how it should be governed. Do you know what I mean? They wanted yeah. to make government bigger, as opposed to Republicans want to get rid of these administrations to make government smaller. So mm-hmm. everybody's using the same language. They have different goals. But the media would have you believe that Trump is completely tanking the way he's handling the transition.
Yeah, they pearl clutch about every single like nugget of information that comes out of his administration, every single cabinet pick. They are aghast that every one of them is going to tear down the country to its studs. It's all very bad.
It's wild, is what it is. And what's funny is, and it's not even to say that there aren't criticisms that need to be had of some of his picks. I'm not saying that, but the narrative of Chicken Little, the sky is falling with all of his picks is ridiculous.
Yes.
And again, CBS of all, now, a lot of times I'm very skeptical of polling. We all know that. But to think that CBS did a poll specifically on Trump's handling of the presidential transition and 59% of Americans, I'm not talking about Republicans, I'm not talking about any particular party, 59% of Americans approve of the way he is handling the transition.
That's a huge number. That's a huge number for any poll in our country.
And the majority of it, the most support that he has is ages 18 to 30.
Again, that's crazy. Because we were told by the media that it's the young vote that's going to put Kamala in the White House because they are the most informed, they have the most at stake, and yet they're kind of okay with what's going on right now. It's interesting.
Let me just point this out, because I've been thinking about this a few times. I remember right after, especially if we were having some listeners that are a little bit younger, right? So right after Obama's election in 08, there was a lot of confidence about how the country would continue to swing. And it was this view that from now on, the Democrats were going to dominate forever. And they became really, really comfortable in that idea, and that they were sure to have the youth vote, the minority vote, like all of that. And so they would do these maps that would have projections of how stuff will look in the future. And the map got bluer and bluer and bluer, right? Mm-hmm. They got really confident. And then they continued to double down on all of their ideas. Obama ended up losing control, I believe, of the House and the Senate. I can't remember, mm-hmm. but during the midterms. And then when he went to get elected in 2012, he had to cobble together like this. Honestly, it was one of the first campaigns that I would say in my most adult life that was actively trying to cobble together people through division in order mm-hmm. to vote for him.
Mm-hmm. It was a ragtag type of group.
It was. Yeah. And so and then ever since then, their position and their power has gotten a little weaker. Mm-hmm. And then you had the response, which was Trump in 2016.
Yeah.
And so I just mentioned that because I don't want people to become overconfident either. Like, we can't just be like, everybody's going to love us now. We're doing right. so great.
Every one of these picks is going to change the world for the better. Yeah. All of them are criticism free. No.
And the entire country has swung right. It's going to go on.
He has a lot to prove in this. He has a lot. And so do his cabinet picks. If they don't hit the ground running and make some substantial changes that positively impact Americans within those first 100 days, like, Republicans can, in my opinion, say buy to their ideas for 2028. I mean, unless they run a candidate that's super, super strong, because he made a lot of promises on that campaign trail. And we have a lot of room to grow in our country. A lot of things that are, I was going to say, they're backwards, that need fixing like ASAP.
Yeah. So I just, you know, wanted to point that out because we're all feeling very, very confident, but like, don't get too overconfident. But don't as of coffee. Right now, he has support, even on the deporting all illegal immigrants or migrants. He has 57% approval on that.
That's huge. Okay?
So he's now right. So all that to put that out there is that the media is panicking. They're really upset. They're upset that we have a debate here and we're having a dialogue. And let me tell you, that dialogue and what's happening right now in these poll numbers would not exist if it was only the media that had full control of the message. And that is why they're upset.
Right. Oh, yeah. They're scared. It's like a child that's having one of his or her kind of privileges taken away. That's being a slap on the wrist and being told, no, you can't act like that. This is now, you're not going to be able to play with that anymore because you have mishandled it for so long. And they're protesting and they're mad. They're stomping their foot. And well,
speaking of protesting, I know that we were talking about if Trump won the election, we were anticipating to have really reactive protest.
Mm-hmm.
And now, granted, the election ended up being pretty solidly he won.
Yeah, I think we said if it was like razor thin margins, that's when the people would hit the streets, because there would be so much room for questioning and would there be a recount and it was stolen or there was some funny business. But it was pretty clear.
Yeah. So nothing happened. But I am very interested to see how this administration is reported on, how it's handled, and how things are going to be different from 2016 or from his first term because the media landscape has changed so much.
Yeah, it's deteriorated so much. And I think we'll know right away from Inauguration Day on, we're going to know how this is going to be handled. Even things that are, like we said, roundly approved of by a majority of Americans, if they don't report fairly on that, I don't see how they can sustain that business model. Who's going to watch it except for like the real progressive lefties who just want to kind of live in a alternate reality? I don't know.
Even they aren't watching. Like right now, I think MSNBC, who's about to get like, is getting spun off of Comcast. And there's even jokes about Elon Musk possibly buying it or someone.
He's so glorious.
Which would be freaking hilarious. But honestly, why would you buy something that is so, I mean, you would have to completely revamp the entire structure.
Well, and that's why they're stressed out, because they don't know if they're going to be relevant anymore. What are they going to do? I mean, they all already have podcasts. What are they going to do, though, if their network just kind of fades into oblivion? That's a hard pill to swallow after you've been in a place of, in a posture of power for the last 4 years. I don't know.
Well,
that's got to be
definitely
difficult.
Not going well. And it should be really interesting to see how everything pans out, because there's even rumors that this administration is going to start letting in and giving, because there's very few seats in the White House press room, and that they're possibly going to be giving some of those seats to independent platforms and podcasts.
Right. I'm not that far away from the White House, so I expect my pass post-haste.
Rachel will be our White House correspondent.
I would love it. I'll bring Meg to the pressers.
She'd be so cute with her little pacifier.
I know.
Asking questions. Great. Oh, my God.
Raising her hand.
I know. But we'll see how that goes. It'll be very interesting. Speaking of meltdowns about cabinet picks, there has been some discussion of Trump's latest cabinet picks. Now, I think he has a strategy here with what he's doing with the cabinet picks. But because you guys have to understand that the way he is doing this is not normal. Of course, nothing that Trump does is normal. He is like, I almost feel like it's like a fire hose strategy. Like he is just laying it all out there, right? And he's laying it all out there so the public can kind of get used to the idea and the story stays in the news cycle. And then as soon as they have to go and start going through their process of getting confirmed, it's like too much to turn anybody down. Does that make sense?
Kind of. It's kind of like he's just overwhelming us with information all at one time and kind of seeing how it's going to play out because we're just getting these things kind of rapid fire. And also some of them are throwing us for a loop. So it's rapid fire confusion. Nobody knows how to feel about all of it. People are trying to figure out his strategy. But then also do due diligence and researching who these people are. It's just a lot of information.
It's a lot. And I feel like it's kind of like an overwhelm sort of strategy. I don't know if it's necessarily for the people as much as it is for DC and the Senate, because when you have already announced all these people ahead of time and given the American public time to research them for themselves and not be dependent on how the media is reporting and telling you about these people, then it's kind of a double-edged sword, because you can have more time to create support, but then you can also have more time, you know, to allow the media like runway to attack them. So specifically, especially the hot picks like RFK, Jay, Pete Hegseth, and Tulsi Gabbard right now, I would say are the three that are like mostly in the crosshairs of the establishment. But there are also some recent cabinet picks that people have questions about, specifically Republicans and some of his supporters. One of them being the nominee for Surgeon General, Janet.
I'm not even going to pronounce it.
Like, so a lot of people, I started getting messages about her because there are videos of her early on in the pandemic where she is promoting masking, social distancing, vaccination, that sort of thing. And then people are like, I have a perspective on this that I don't know if it's going to be particularly popular. Now, from, I would say, as soon as we got into the pandemic and we did the 2 weeks going into the 3 weeks, and I started to see like stuff wasn't slowing down or like policies weren't changing, they were actually ramping up, I personally became suspicious early on. But that's not everyone. And that's especially, I would not expect that
from the medical community.
From the medical community, who are already so entrenched in where your authority comes from and who's telling you and how you inform. Obviously, it's coming from the NIH, the CDC down, right? Because all of these individual doctors don't have time to conduct their own studies about COVID and everything like that independently. They're getting their information from a central source, which is why it's really important who we appoint at the level of the NIH, the CDC, and the FDA, right?
Yeah.
Which those choices, I think, have been really good choices. Now, if you keep watching videos from, I'm going to call her Janet because I can't pronounce the last name. There are videos later in 2022 that although she is talking about vaccines, she's saying, look, and I think there was a video, and I'll play it here for you guys. I think it was in September or December of 2022, somewhere in that window.
What this vaccine is, it's the original vaccine, plus they included protection against Omicron, because right now, Omicron BA4, BA5, that's the dominant strain in the United States. But the question is, who will benefit from this? Who will be prioritized? Who needs it? And we know the answer to that. It's those who are high risk, those with underlying medical conditions, heart disease, lung disease, those who have a weak immune system. That's the people, that's the group that we need to prioritize. And then for everyone else, let's wait for that clinical data to come out. For example, I don't want a 19-year-old young, healthy person who's already had COVID and has natural immunity to go rush out and get this booster. That would be inappropriate, premature to get it at this time. But for some people, it may be beneficial.
Where she's like, vaccines help people who are high risk. If you're young, if you're healthy, you do not need a vaccine. And if you do get sick, then mask, social distance, but then you can go about your life. She has never,
not promote like vaccine mandates.
She did not even promote masking in children or for them to be kept out of school. Or she wasn't like this, what was this CNN contributor?
Leanna Wynn?
Yes.
Wynn, yeah. Wynn. She also was the president of Planned Parenthood. I just always want to note that. She was the former, like, Planned Parenthood.
Are you talking about Wynn?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No, not Jeanette. Oh, no. If Jeanette was, or Janet, we'd have a problem. We'd have a problem. Yeah.
So all of that to say that I think my bigger issue in regards to the COVID situation is the forcing of the vaccines and also the unwillingness from the medical establishment, from Fauci, the CDC, the NIH, and Big Pharma, for people to learn more about these vaccines, mm-hmm. right? I don't see that from her. She's doing the typical, like, what almost every doctor would say.
Yeah.
But she was also a big advocate of, like, look, if you are healthy and you don't want to take it, and then you don't have to. She believes.
Which honestly is, immunity. If she talked about that as a MD out loud, lots of MDs thought it. Physicians, people who worked in the medical establishment thought it, but they were afraid to even say, don't get vaccinated if you're healthy. Yeah. It was more of a blanket, like, everyone should get the vaccine. So, I mean, good for her for saying that. It's one of those, honestly, we're going to need to wait and see. With so many of these cabinet picks, I'm not overly freaked out. Some people are saying, this is taking down Maha altogether. And I'm like, well, let's give her a little time.
Well, like, I think let's, and not only that, but you have to understand that the Surgeon General isn't necessarily someone who dictates policy. The Surgeon General is more of, like, almost like a medical spokesperson. Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
Versus the NIH and the CDC, who, like, the Surgeon General would be getting their information from.
Yeah.
And that is being headed up, or at least the nominees are RFKJ. And now, oh my gosh, I just forgot his name. He was just announced yesterday. Jay Bhattacharya.
Yeah.
So he was just, and he, Bhattacharya, was a huge, like, proponent about that, or an opponent, let's say, about these mandates and mm-hmm. the vaccines and not the masking.
For it too. Yeah.
He was attacked all the time
about
it. He was
treated really poorly. So I think people should, like, focus on that. Focus on the people who are on the, like, policy side of things, or a little more tangible changes that they can make. However, I do have an issue with one of the other cabinet picks.
No,
and I really want to talk about Thanksgiving. And so this is making me even kind of more mad that.
Well, we'll talk about.
I know.
This pick, and then we'll talk about Thanksgiving.
Okay, good.
And because we won't be on this pick for very long, okay? Because I think we can both agree. We don't like this.
Not the best.
Not the best idea. Mm-mm. And I know why I think I know why it's happening, but I
want to hear why you think, because I don't feel like there's a good reason.
Well, I think I know why it's happening, but I didn't say it was a good reason.
Okay, good. We're on the same page.
So his nominee for Secretary of Labor is Lori Chavez, and I can say Chavez. Okay. So she, by the way, lost her race for her congressional seat in the state of Oregon, mm-hmm. right? So she was running for Congress in Oregon, lost her seat. She is running as a Republican.
Weird.
And well, it's on this. I don't know about all her policies. I literally know nothing about her. I'm going to admit, like, I know very little about her, except mm-hmm. for the last name. Her last name is Chavez, and she lost her race. Okay. What I do know is that she is the most pro-labor Republican, which I think that I have probably ever seen, to the point where she co-sponsored the PRO Act. Now, if you're not familiar with the PRO Act, it is a bill that, like, simplifies unionization. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, it's a hard word to say.
So she co-sponsored the PRO Act. So the PRO Act is all about right to work laws, unions. And one of the issues with unions specifically that I personally have, especially have a problem with them at the federal level, mm-hmm. but in private industry, is that I find them to be anti-free market. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the idea of solidifying and forcing people within certain industries to have to engage in a union, I think, is anti-liberty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So specifically, for example, there are unions, say the Teamsters, say teachers, whatever, that if you enter into this industry, you have to become part of the union. You have to pay dues, and those dues come out of your check.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It is mafioso racket, like, that's how I view it. Okay.
Yeah.
As mm-hmm. opposed to allowing people to decide whether or not they want to participate in the union, whether or not they want to do collective bargaining, or if maybe they want to advocate for themselves. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And then the other thing is that a lot of times unions will put restrictions on companies, which a lot of people think like, well, they think like all companies are just super greedy. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have these restrictions on them, then that they're going to frivolously fire you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, a company that is a just company and actually wants to succeed, wants to be competitive and keep their employees as much as possible, especially if you are a good employee. Turnover and frivolous firing is not a way to make a successful company. These right. are my views, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is how I see it. And to force people into participating in a union mm-hmm. and forcing companies to enter into these negotiations that, for the most part, a lot of times are anti, like, everybody.
Yeah.
Because eventually they force issues. It's like the auto industry. One of the main things that brought down, not one of the big things that brought down the auto industry several years back was these insane pensions that they were having mm-hmm. to pay out, as opposed to just letting people invest their own money and understand, I don't know, learn how to invest in order for your retirement, as opposed to this, like, I don't know how to do anything, so I need you to do it for me. Like that sort of thing. It just drives me nuts.
And she is very, so she co-sponsored the PRO Act. She has been endorsed by the Teamsters. And the real nail in the coffin for me is that she was endorsed by Randy Weingarten. And I am not okay with that.
Well, and I think that's the other thing. Like, think about who is endorsing her.
Yeah.
And it's leaders of unions.
Yeah. If parents are concerned about the Surgeon General pick, they should really be concerned about the Secretary of Labor pick, who was endorsed by Randy Weingarten, who drove and basically was the chief of all educational policy in our country during COVID, that wrecked so much of the educational landscape that was already broken, but just like ripped it down and basically spat on it. She was horrible for teachers, horrible for schools, horrible for kids. And she endorsed Lori. So I don't understand that alignment. I don't know if it's purely because she wants to stay powerful. I don't know how she thinks she's going to, or how the teachers' unions are going to retain the power that they have right now over educational policy, but whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, I'm curious as to how this will pan out, because clearly this pick is very, and I understand the reason I said earlier that I kind of understand the pick is that Trump has been trying to cater and attract the blue collar union vote. But I don't necessarily think, and it does take time to change culture. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be much more beneficial to attract that vote mm-hmm. using alternative policy instead of just going back to the same thing.
I don't know. I mean, could this be just a nod to the unions?
I think that's what,
like,
it is.
Yeah. Like, I'm still here. I didn't just campaign with you and I'm going to forget about you. I'm putting someone in there who has your best interests at heart. I don't know. It just seems like a really odd pick to me.
And I think that, to me, that's the only explanation for it. Do you know what I mean? Now, we also have to acknowledge that Trump is not a traditional Republican. Like, he's barely, he's like Republican light. Like, he's
surprises me. It's not like anything he does surprises me. This one just seems so out of left field. But like you said, it could just be as simple as I'm throwing a bone to unions.
And what I find really interesting is this narrative of, like, from the media where they're like, oh, he's just going to pick people that will do his bidding. Yet he has literally the most ideologically diverse cabinet that I have seen in a long time.
Right.
Like, he has Democrats. He has a Republican that is pro-labor. He has, like,
he is not falling in line. Like, people aren't joining because they're all bureaucrats that think literally. They think the same as early. They think the same as him. It's just, it's not the case. It's a very diverse, for all the diversity talk, Trump's delivering.
We have to remember, it's not the right diversity.
That's right. Okay.
There's only one typical diversity.
Okay. Okay. So, okay. Can we talk about Thanksgiving?
Let's talk about Thanksgiving, because I can see that you're about to burst.
I want to talk about Thanksgiving. And then we also have some listener questions. We'll do a rapid fire round of listener questions, which I think
for Thanksgiving.
We're just staying here at the house, the six of us. Typically, My husband's uncle comes out and stays with us for a couple weeks around Thanksgiving because his birthday's in there and we usually have dinner with him and he stays at our house. But this year we're going to switch it up and he's going to come out for Easter. So it's just going to be the six of us eating. Cool. We go to church in the morning. We have a service of Holy Communion at 10 a.m. And then we come home and we cook all day. And we usually eat around 3 or 3:30 and then we eat again, usually around 6 or 7.
Do you do like a really traditional Thanksgiving?
We do. Yeah. I have always had Thanksgiving for the most part at our house. Even when we lived in California closer to family, I usually hosted. So yeah, we've always done the traditional. We do a turkey, even though no one really likes turkey in our family. We still do it. We just douse it in gravy. And this year we're also doing ham because my girls love ham. So there's going to be lots of leftovers. I am almost as excited about the leftovers as I am about
the leftovers. We're making the best part.
Like hand pies. We're going to make split pea soup with a ham hock. We're going to make turkey pot pie because we'll have a lot. We always buy like a 20-pound bird and there's only six of us and whatever. But we do it all. Yeah. Stuffing, cranberry sauce, rolls. Nothing healthy at all. It's great. Yeah, tons of seed oils and always with a turkey butter mold on the table. We love to set the table. My daughter always makes little name cards and then we go around and talk about what we're thankful for. We do have a weird little tradition. We watch The Twilight Zone while we food prep. It's really funny, actually.
Like the old school.
The old school. Like do, 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 do. Yep. We have that going on a television in the kitchen. While we're all prepping, it's a really weird thing.
Where did that come from?
I don't know about the rest of the country, but when I was growing up in California, there was always a Twilight Zone marathon on Thanksgiving, always. Oh. And so I just grew up watching Twilight Zone. It would kind of be on in the background. It wasn't like a major tradition, so to speak, but then it kind of just stuck. And then when my kids got old enough to watch it without freaking out, maybe about, I want to say 6 or 7 years ago, we just started turning it on. And now they ask, like, are we turning on? Even though they don't love it, it's just kind of on in the background and it's funny. And we have a couple episodes that are particularly weird and we enjoy those. And we cook and we feast and it's great. That's a great day.
Funny.
And then part of our Thanksgiving tradition is that the day after Thanksgiving on Friday, that's when we decorate for Christmas. We go and we pick out our
tree.
That's
appropriate. I have very strong feelings about that.
We have very, well, see, my daughter, my eldest is like, you do not decorate before.
Thank you. Okay.
Like Thanksgiving has to be finished before we celebrate. So even if a Christmas carol comes on, like we went shopping yesterday and a Christmas carol came on the radio and she's like, turn it off. Absolutely not. So we wake up early tomorrow morning. We get a delicious pastry breakfast and then we go shop for our Christmas tree. We watch Christmas movies all day while we decorate the house. So it's a whole couple days of festivities. It's really good. We love it.
That's funny because my neighbors across the street, actually probably a few neighbors on the street, have already put up Christmas decorations. And I have very strong feelings about like you do not decorate for Christmas until post-Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing it now, even earlier and earlier and earlier, like beginning of November.
It's like Thanksgiving gets no respect.
I know. I know. Well, it was a bad holiday. It was a colonizer holiday. So
I guess maybe. Yeah. Let's put that out there. Let's go ahead and put that in everybody's brain. If you're
not really.
If you're decorating before Thanksgiving. Just saying.
Yeah. No, it's a great holiday. I'm already hungry. I'm so excited for food. And I will say that we do make a couple dishes that I'm not a gourmand, but I do love to cook. And
Thomas Keller is a chef.
His leek bread pudding is my favorite recipe. We make it every year, even though I think me and my husband are the only ones who eat it. I don't even care. I'll sit with the whole casserole dish. And I do make tater tot casserole and the girls love it. So
those
are our favorites. Yep. What about you? What do you do?
Well, it's just the two of us. It's just us and the dogs. And so our Thanksgiving will definitely fluctuate from year to year. So it depends on
like weather and stuff
like
that.
Well, just kind of like our schedules and things like that. Because if we do Thanksgiving with family, it typically requires driving to Florida, which is an entire thing when you have 5 dogs. So sometimes we'll just take 2 of them and then we have to get dog sitting for the other ones and things like that. And then sometimes we just don't want to deal with it. And when we don't want to deal with it, since we have been living in Tennessee, our thing is that we go up to camp for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
because it's just the two of us. So we'll go up to camp. I'll prepare like a little little Thanksgiving meal for the two of us, and I'll finish it off up at the camp. Now that I actually have a Blackstone up there and some burners in the, and I can
light up, fancy,
and I can actually properly cook. The only thing I don't have, I mean, I guess I technically have an oven with the wood burning stove. It just requires some finagling because I'm literally cooking with fire. But yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And it's just funny because, and then when we go to, if we go to Puerto Rico for Thanksgiving, it's a whole other experience. So, because my husband's family is also Puerto Rican, this is actually really funny. So when you grow up in a Puerto Rican household, you do Thanksgiving because, I mean, we are a territory of the U.S. So Thanksgiving has become kind of part of our culture. Even, but but you do, your meals are a little bit different. So it's like you do the turkey, but then you'll also do, instead of ham, you'll do a roasted pork shoulder sometimes, which is typical for Christmas, actually. Yeah. You do rice, you do pasteles, you do flan, you do like, so like all the casserole stuff.
I don't even know what you're talking about. What is pasteles?
Pasteles is kind of, how can I describe this? It's like the Puerto Rican version of a tamale, but it's not.
Oh, send it to me.
So, well, look, full disclosure to anyone who is listening. If you do a traditional pastel and you put it on your plate, it kind of looks like a wet turd, but.
Gross.
It is delicious because it is a dough of like plantain and different root vegetables. And then you fill it with a savory pork. And you fold it, like you create like a, almost like a pocket, and then you wrap it in a banana leaf, and then you tie it off, and then you boil it.
Okay.
So that's why I'm like, it kind of is like a tamale in the sense of like, it's masa and it's wrapped, but it has no corn, it's not steamed, and there's no corn husk, so it's like completely different.
Oh, I want to try that now. Dang it.
They're literally my favorite thing, and it's very, very holiday specific because typically like you'll find someone that makes them and you buy them by the dozen because they're very labor intensive. I'll make mine and I divide it over like maybe a few days. I have recipes on my blog from when I was food blogging. It's still out there. It is absolutely delicious. It is one of my favorite things in the whole world. I remember when I have introduced it to my friends who are not Puerto Rican, I do warn them. I'm like, I know what it looks like.
But it's good.
But it's delicious. So that is a very, and then the other thing is that in Puerto Rico, the holiday season is extremely long, like stupid long.
Okay.
Like it starts on Thanksgiving, goes to Christmas. Then we have the Epiphany or Three Kings Day, January 6th.
Yeah.
And then after that in Puerto Rico, just for the heck of it, there's like this thing is called Octavitas, which is like another 8 days of just leftover Christmas parties.
Yeah.
So it goes well into January.
I love it. I get sad. We celebrate till Epiphany, which is Frankie's baptismal birthday. And we take down the tree on January 6th. And I get sad when that's over. I love it. We do full 12 days of Christmas. That's when we actually start giving gifts and we give one every day. So I like continued prolonged celebrations.
Yeah. So the Christmas season in Puerto Rico is really long. There's even like a street festival in Old San Juan, La Calle San Sebastián, that is like artisanal music. It's really, it's very, very long and festive back home. And then we also have our own like version of caroling, but we're definitely in Puerto Rico. It's definitely more about Christmas than it is Thanksgiving. Yeah. Thanksgiving is kind of like just an adopted holiday.
Well, I feel like Thanksgiving here has kind of gotten forgotten too. I mean, it's been swallowed up whole by Christmas. I think it's really just, I don't see a whole lot of Thanksgiving decor. People are kind of just hurrying through it to get to Christmas. And that's why we don't do anything about Christmas until we've had a proper Thanksgiving. I love it. It's such a wonderful holiday and my girls love it too. So I'm trying to hold on to that as much as possible.
It's a lot of fun. Like I love it when we go to Florida. Like my husband has like a giant family, you know, and it's like, I think we're great grand uncle and aunt like 10 times over or something like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's like a huge family. So it's a lot of fun. I get a little overwhelmed with it. You know what I mean? Because I'm a little of an introvert.
I can't imagine. You get overwhelmed when I text you. So I can definitely see you getting overwhelmed at 10 children.
No, that's the children of the children. That's the thing. Like, it's just.
Holy moly. I love it.
Crazy.
That's my dream. Are you going there for Christmas then to Florida?
I don't think so, because we have my husband's brother is overseas and he's coming back for that they're going to be here for Christmas. And we own the property together with him.
So, I
think he's going to come up to Tennessee because they want to go, him and my husband want to go to the property and work the property. So I think it's actually working the other way around, which I am completely fine with.
I know you are. Because then you're going to stay at your house where it's quiet. I'm just going to bombard you. I'm going to have things shipped to you. I'm going to send you videos every day.
I mean, I sound like such a Grinch sometimes. Like, even decorating is like,
you're my eldest daughter. She's like, nope, this is great. Can we not go anywhere ever again? I'm totally fine with that.
Well, and then even the decorating, like, I do have the one holiday I have decorations for is Christmas. So I do typically put up Christmas stuff. But then, like, if it's literally like we're going to be traveling a lot or I'm just like super busy, I don't feel that pressure of like, I have to get Christmas stuff up.
Right.
Because it's just us. And we,
the dogs would like it. Mercedes, do it.
They have no idea. They have no freaking idea. They're fine. So,
okay. So are we going to do listener questions?
Let's do some listener questions just to finish off.
Let's do rapid fire. All right, here we go. So just like 30 seconds each question and your first initial thoughts. There's no wrong answers. Okay.
Let's see.
What is something you two disagree on politically or not?
I mean, I think I would say, I don't know. I don't think there's anything we hardcore disagree on, but we do have some different views on things. And I think it's definitely, I chalk it up to like, I don't have kids. So I have a tendency to be a little more like, cool aunt, whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, like, we've talked about the legalization of marijuana, for example. I'm a little more lax on it. I am recognizing
hard no.
There has been some repercussions on it.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit more libertarian in those kind of views. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
So, but there hasn't been anything that we've both gone like head to head on anything.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
No. Okay. What is the likelihood of World War III before Trump takes office?
On a scale of what? 1 to 10?
Let's just do 1 to 10. Let's do 1 to 10. I mean, I hope it's 0. That's what I hope.
That is a really hard one. I mean, now, so like from day to day, I would say we're sitting at maybe like a 6. Like there's like a 50-50 chance. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you think Ben Carson is going to get appointed anywhere?
I don't think so. And I think he has said that he's not, he's kind of alluded to him not actually being interested.
Yeah.
That he wants to be a support and he wants to be like an advisor, but it doesn't seem like he wants to be in the cabinet. Does that make sense?
He's a good guy. He's just a good guy. He's brilliant, kind, gentleman.
See, maybe
he's actually my friend's uncle, which is.
Oh, really? I think he's very, I like him and he has a very soft and welcoming kind of Mr. Rogers demeanor, but also at the same time, I don't like, it also makes me like as a, in a position like that of leadership within this cabinet, like, I don't feel like it jives sometimes.
Like it might not be a good fit.
Yeah. He's just too soft. I don't want to say like not like gentle. Let's put it that way. I don't want to say.
Yeah.
Soft,
it's not a bad thing. Weird. To be soft, but okay. Thoughts on day one executive orders.
Well, they're going to close the border.
Yeah. So I'm here for that.
Here for that. I don't know what else you got. I know he's already talking about, I think he'll probably do it through executive order, transgender individuals in the military.
Yep. He said he'd do that too.
What else is there? The probably releasing some leasing on drilling would be my guess.
So we're saying we support day one executive orders.
For the most part,
I don't support like 4 years of executive orders all the time. I think it's a misuse of power and I don't like it. And I think it's subverting the job of Congress.
Yeah, I have a tendency. So here's the thing. With executive orders, I think different presidents have used it in a different way. And so like there's the Obama approach of like, I have a pen and a phone and I'll basically do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Versus what I would hope come from Trump is that he's going to use executive orders that can have a quick impact on the mess that Biden has created over the last 4 years, specifically on the economy and on the border.
Yeah.
Then we'll see where he goes from there. Because I'm not a huge fan of them either. Like, I don't like them being abused.
Right. Okay. How did you meet?
Social media. So everybody's going to think that we've been friends like for the longest time.
No.
Because we just have so much chemistry.
But we have not.
God. I think we just got acquainted through Instagram because eventually when you start to do, especially on Instagram, there is a very small group of people that are generating this similar content.
Yeah.
And you start getting tagged together.
Yeah.
And so I think that's how you first popped up in my feed. Like somebody mm-hmm. tagged me with you or something like that. Yeah. And then we started DMing in the mm-hmm. back, and the election happened. And Rachel was like, because we started talking about things a little bit more yeah. through social media. Mm-hmm. And Rachel was like, we have to talk about this. We have to have a podcast about it. Let's do a podcast. I need to get this out. I need someone. I think we're both in need of a friend to just like process
yeah.
all of this with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I was a little reluctant at first because mm-hmm. I trust nobody. I'm always like skeptical. And I was like, I don't know this chick. I don't know if we're yeah. going to jive or whatever.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Don't screw it up.
So okay. We have never met each other in person.
No. And some other people are asking, like, do you guys ever hang out? Do you guys go on girls trips together? I'm like, we've never been in the same room. So
no.
Okay. What is your favorite television show?
Mine changes from day to day. Like historical?
Historically speaking,
I would say my favorite, just fun television show would be Seinfeld.
Okay. Mine would be, if I had to pick, all-time favorite that I'll always remember loving it was Alias. When Alias first came out, we were married. We were newly married. And we loved it because it was, spies and it was J.J. Abrams. Did you never watch it? It was good television. It really was. J.J. Abrams is a king.
Yeah. I know it was really, really popular, but it was never one of those shows that stood out to me. I think that was at the same time that The Office started becoming really popular.
Well, and the thing is, too, when you have something that's nostalgic, I remember it because my husband and I were, I want to say, newly married, and it was a television show we watched and we had so much fun. We didn't have kids. We were like, we can watch television whenever we want. This is amazing. And it was fun. And as the seasons went on, you know how it goes. But we loved it, and I don't know if it would stand up if I watched it again now, but it just is in my memory. It's so, special. It was one of the first television shows we, quote-unquote, binge-watched, which we really didn't because it was on once a week, and we would wait for it. But I love that, and I love All Creatures Great and Small. I love that new one on, is it PBS? I love that.
Seen that one.
It's sweet.
I freaking love Seinfeld. And my husband and I, we our conversations – on a weekly basis, we'll have some kind of...
No, see, me and my husband are like that, but it's with more movie-based. It's not always a television show. A lot of Office quotes, so.
Do you prefer movies or television shows, currently, today?
It's hard to say because I don't watch...
I should say series.
Well, our family watches a movie a weekend. Every Sunday, we watch tons and tons of classical movies. Every Sunday, we come home from church and we watch one or two classic movies. So I'd have to say movies, that's the stage of life we're in, because by the time we get into bed, which is... early, we're so tired that to make it through television shows, right now we're watching Blacklist, but those, I'm not intently watching them.
So that to me is a network TV show,
right,
which I don't tend to like.
Right. I would prefer to watch a documentary over all of them, but I do like classic movies. Okay. Who is your dream presidential pick?
I don't know. Honestly, who's yours?
It'd be like if I could pick the personality of one person and the policy of the other person. I think that Ron DeSantis would make a great president because he's great at governing. But I don't know. I really love, and I always have really liked Rand Paul. So that's very libertarian of me, and I am not a libertarian. So I just really think one of the major problems that never gets talked about is our national debt. It is a really, really big problem, and it needs to be solved. I don't think people understand how much everything else hinges on the fact that we have no control over our monetary problem right now. And he is laser focused about that. And I think that that's really important. But
I would say this, if Rand Paul were to successfully get elected and have a successful presidency,
mm-hmm.
I think we are getting in potentially, especially after Trump runs and his term, if he pulls things off correctly and if he does things right or well, I should say, I think that the ground would be laid for Rand Paul to potentially be able to run, because the idea would be that the administrative state and all of the quote deep state people
is gone.
And then you won't have nearly as much opposition with a Rand Paul coming in.
Yeah. Like people like him and Thomas Massie, they are so common sense when it comes to why are we doing this? Why does Congress do this? It is broken. We should not be running it like this. But the problem is that they are not popular because they're calling out their own, which is why their ideas don't advance. And I just love them for it. I feel like
they both would need a type of bulldog like Trump.
Yeah, because they're not politicians.
No.
And so
and they don't have the charismatic personality in order to accomplish like what Trump has done. So it's really, honestly, it's really dependent on how he does this. Because I mean, like, he's like Vance, for example, but I think Vance would be great to maybe hold for a little bit just because he's so young. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. But I don't really have like an ideal.
No, neither do I. Okay. Last question.
Okay.
What are you most thankful for today?
What am I most thankful for today?
Or in general? Yeah.
My health, the Lord, and my husband, honestly, our little family. Like, I'm just very, very blessed in where we are in our life. And a lot of people will be like, well, don't you wish you had XYZ? And I'm like, of course, but like, I am in a very supportive, happy, loving relationship. And we're like in a really, like, we're just like in a really good place. And I really can't ask for more than that. And frankly, I am very grateful for the optimistic view that I see for our future. Hopefully that everything like freaking calms down and things pan out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like I'm so thankful for so many things that, you know, I can't list them all off, but I'm extremely thankful for life. My life is blessed. I have an abundance and I deserve none of it. So very much for my husband and my children and our church. But there's so many other things. Thankful for this platform. Thankful for you. Thankful for our country that takes so many hits and keeps on
like, chugging.
It does. God bless America. And yeah, we all have so much to be grateful for.
I'll also say that it has been, we put this podcast together literally on a whim.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even express how whimmy this is.
Yeah.
It is a two-lady operation that we're pasting together on our own with no outside support whatsoever, except for our listeners.
Yeah.
And so, if anything, I'm extremely grateful for you guys who
listen. Yeah, if you're at the end of this episode and you're still listening, we are thankful for you.
Yeah, because otherwise we'd just be like two crazy ladies having a therapy session on the
public
airways.
Which, I mean, we still might do. To be honest, we might still do it, but it wouldn't be nearly as fun.
And in that department, in that realm, which we probably should have mentioned a little bit at the start, as we move into the new year and post-Christmas, our schedule is going to be a little bit different. So Friday, we will not be having an episode. We will be out for the week of Christmas, actually 2 weeks, right? Because so the week of Christmas and the week before Christmas, there'll be no episode. However, when we come back, we'll be coming back as a new show, right?
Get excited, and it'll be better than ever.
It'll be better than ever.
Just in time for the inauguration.
Exactly. So we're going to be rebranded with a new name, new art, probably also a new publishing schedule. So pay attention to that. We'll be sharing it on our socials and stuff. But if you are subscribed to us through whatever your favorite podcasting app is, even when we do the switchover, you will continue to be subscribed to us. But we're going to give you a heads up just in case something happens. You can continue to follow us and everything will be separated out. So we'll be Rivera and Reeves, and that'll be the name of our show. Once we come into election season, campaign games will make a comeback, but it'll be like a segment during the campaign season. And we'll have our own platform that is dedicated to the podcast. So social media channels,
it's gonna be awesome.
Podcast, and we'll hopefully be able to roll out more ways for you guys to engage with us one-on-one. Like, we got lots of plans. We're very excited. We thought this was going to be like a fun thing to do just for the election, and then we were going to bounce, but we're getting along. Everything's going well, so we might as well keep it going.
I agree. It's going to be great. So look forward to that. And we hope you guys have the happiest of Thanksgivings and enjoy tons and tons of food. I think that if I know Masadie and I well enough, we will be sharing our respective foods on Instagram for you guys to look at. And
yeah,
so
I have a turkey breast that's been brining that I need to pull out and take care
of.
Oh,
I love it. So I can't wait.
All right, you guys. Well, that's a wrap for today's episode of Campaign Games. Make sure that you give us a follow, leave us a 5-star rating, and leave us a review. Any kind of lovely comments, send us any messages, emails. We love them all. All right. And if you share us on your social media platform, make sure that you tag us so we can also share it, because sharing is caring. That's it. And thanks for tuning in to Campaign Games. We will catch you next week on Wednesday for another episode of Campaign Games, the game of survival for both the candidates and the voters. Bye.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.